For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Mid-American Gardener, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. This week, I'm excited to be joined by Mike Brunk. Mike has worked in the private tree care industry and for the Illinois Shawnee National Forest. He is a University of Illinois graduate and a state-licensed landscape architect. Mike is probably best known as the city arborist for Urbana, Illinois, and we're very happy that he's here to chat to us today. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I am good. Thank you so much for coming in. As always, I'm very excited to learn from the experts. This is our second episode of the podcast, so you're getting in at the beginning. We have several questions to go through today, and I thought it would be great if you could start off telling us about our first email that we've received from Miriam.
Sure. Miriam sent us an email. She's from Dyer, Indiana, and the email reads, I understand a black walnut tree's roots emit a type of poison that inhibits understory growth, and she's correct. There's a toxic chemical that walnuts emit called juglone. I've tried various ground covers, she says, such as astilbe, lilies of the valley, and balloon flowers, all with little or no success. She goes on to say, I've got a children's sandbox under there now. Any hardy plant suggestions to try before I fire up the chainsaw?
Ouch.
Well, yes, there are other plants that are, in fact, there's many plants that are tolerant of juglone and can possibly be grown around walnut trees. Now, I say that because there's many lists out there, and there's really never been an in-depth study about it, so this is just all by observation. But first off, I'll say there's a couple grasses to try. And it has to be a sunny location, and it has to be moist. And so the plants that I'm suggesting also have to have other requirements, depending on what the plant is. But fescue for a semi-shaded area or bluegrass for a sunny area are listed as tolerable to walnut toxicity. Other ground covers that you might want to try, a hosta, bugleweed, jack-in-the-pulpit, iris, aster, liriope. Now, that's another ground cover that looks grass-like that might fill in. Daffodils, spring flowering botanical tulips or tulips also are good plants. There's for green ground covers, maybe pachysandra or Virginia creeper. There's a number of trees and shrubs as well. So a lot of these plants are available online. And I would say that before you try to cut the tree down or decide to cut the tree down, there's a lot of selections to maybe experiment with. Now, the question of the sandbox, should you have a sandbox under a walnut tree?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good question. I would say that wouldn't be a very good idea because walnuts are big and they fall.
Oh.
So walnut trees are not good trees over parking spaces or playgrounds or sandboxes for
like
that reason.
Chicken licking. Right?
Yes.
Didn't that fall
the sky?
The
sky is falling. That's right.
Now, leading on from that, planting flowers around the base of trees.
Uh-huh.
We have not long been in the Champaign-Urbana area, and I see a lot of people have planted beautiful tulips and daffodils around the base of their trees that are on the boulevard. Is that something that the city of Urbana and Champaign arborists like people to do?
That's a very cool question because it's not something we like people to do, because if you think of how those flowers are planted, it's a chopping type motion when they're digging into the soil. And what are we chopping? Tree roots. So a lot of times when we see flower planting around the base of the tree, several years later, we see the tree declining, especially in the younger trees. So we really frown on people planting flowers around trees. Now, we know that it's a beautiful, can be very beautiful, and it's usually shown in a lot of the garden magazines and things. So it's a common request. I would say this, if you have your own private tree and you really, really want flowers under it, there's a couple things to remember. Plant perennials. Plants that will only be needed to be planted once. Plant very small perennials, so seedlings. And I would drill the holes. There's bulb augers that you can buy for the cordless drills. Drilling a hole does a lot less damage to tree roots than chopping. On younger trees, do not plant in the root zone. You can plant outside the root zone when you first plant a tree. So know where that root zone is. It's usually a mulched area, I would say 3 to 6 feet out from the tree. And if you see the tree planted, you know exactly where those roots are. But get those flowers planted before the roots grow into that area. That'd be the very best way to do it.
Oh, so when the tree is young, put the plants
outside
of the root system. Area, which is 3 to 6 feet.
Yeah. Generally, you'd be safe there. But, you know, the young trees are the ones that are most susceptible to root damage. So you have to be very, very careful. And if you're not sure, don't do it.
Okay.
You invest a lot of money in those trees.
Don't do this at home, folks. Okay. Well, so talking of the trees and the city, the city trees on the boulevard, will the city actually trim private trees? That can people in the city request personal tree work?
Generally not. The city doesn't do private tree trimming unless a private tree is overextending a street or is a visibility concern or a public hazard that needs immediate attention. And in those unusual circumstances, the city may act on that and end up trimming a private tree. Now, a lot of times, people call the city to trim public trees. And I would say that is a different handled differently among the communities. In Urbana, for example, we have a preventative maintenance program, which is we go down the street and we trim every tree from top to bottom, and we try to keep it on as short a trimming cycle as we can. In order to do that, we do not do request pruning. Now, we will take the calls and we will investigate those trees, and if they're hazardous, we'll give them attention.
Right.
But otherwise, we determine when the trees are to be trimmed. Some communities will take requests from citizens and they'll put them on a schedule. But it's not a very efficient way to maintain an urban forest. So many communities have reverted to deciding when trees are to be trimmed themselves.
So if I wanted one of those stinky ginkgo trees chopped down, we can't put in a request for that.
It, again, depends on the community. We have a tree preservation ordinance in Urbana, and I believe Champaign does as well, which means in the ordinance it specifically states that trees will not be removed due to littering fruit. So in the ginkgo situations, now many of those trees were planted and they didn't fruit till they were 20 to 25 years old. They have fruit. We try to plant male ginkgos, but females sneak into the mix. And by ordinance, the city won't remove those trees due to that fruit.
Okay. Now, when you chop down a tree in the city, what happens to, I've seen the lumber on the side. Do you let people take those? What happens to the lumber once you take down a tree?
Okay, that's a very good question. We one of our goals in Urbana is to be sustainable. So we have promoted recycling for a number of years now. And one of the aspects of recycling is the landscape debris that comes from our community. So that was hence the start of the Landscape Recycling Center. So our wood is taken out to the Landscape Recycling Center in the form of either mulches or logs.
Okay, great. I think you have an email there from Linda Sue, who actually talks about taking down some trees, cutting down some trees. What could you tell me? Perhaps we can answer her question while we talk on the subject of cutting down trees.
Sure. Linda Sue looks like they took down 4 pines last year. And what she wants to know is, can you please tell me how to get rid of the stumps? Okay, that's a good question. I just removed about 8 stumps on a property that's fairly new for my wife and I.
Not yourself, by yourself, surely.
Yes, by myself. Okay. And how I did it was a rental company. So with technology these days, companies have made stump grinders much smaller than what they used to be, and they have walk-behind stump grinders, and many of the rental companies provide those. So for around $250 plus or minus a day, I was able to get a stump grinder brought to my home for the day, and then the company came back and picked it up. And I had, I think, about 8 stumps that I ground, anywhere from about 18 inches in diameter to about 8 inches in diameter.
Wow.
And it was a man toy. I just rolled that thing around. I get this one and I get that one, and I had a ball.
Okay, but do you need to be a bodybuilder to actually use one of these?
You don't.
Things?
You need to be an able-bodied person, and so you need to be able to get out in the garden and do some gardening. But I think just about anybody can run these things as long as you follow the safety directions. You wear your safety goggles and your gloves and your heavy pants and your boots.
And they give you instructions when they drop it off.
Of course, they give you instructions on how to operate these things. But besides renting, you can always look in your Yellow Pages. There's usually local certified arborists or landscape companies that provide stump grinding services. Always make sure they have their insurance if they're going to work or any contractors working on your property.
Okay. As a reminder, if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or this podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com or message us via Facebook. Simply search for Mid-American Gardener. We also have a new voicemail set up, so feel free to call in with your questions for either the podcast or the TV show. The number is 217-300-8224. That's 217-300-8224. Leave us your questions and we'll answer them as soon as possible on air. Now, we have a couple more questions that we've received from viewers and listeners. Jess from Champaign, she wrote and asked, what are the ways you can identify if a tree is structurally unsound or otherwise in bad condition?
Okay, that's a good question. And I'll break this up into two categories. Trees can generally show decline in a number of ways, whether it's dieback in their branches, a thinning of the canopy, or early defoliation in the fall, or even profuse suckering. Those are all signs that a tree is stressed in some manner. Now,
may I ask,
sure.
What is suckering?
Oh, good question. Okay, so suckering
is advantageous
growth that grows sometimes out of the trunk. It's small branches that will grow out of the trunk or branches, just kind of an oddity. They're just coming out of a branch at an unusual location. And sometimes they come out in groupings or bunches. And it's a stress factor. It's a tree sometimes trying to grow more foliage to feed itself.
Okay.
You see this a lot of times around the base of a tree. With emerald ash borer, we would see it throughout the entire tree. They'd grow on the trunk. They'd grow up into the branch structure. So a lot of profuse suckering. Crab apples, it's kind of a natural thing. On many crab apples, they just sucker naturally. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're stressed. But I wanted to say about the question, she talked about structure.
Yes.
Now, poor structure in a tree doesn't necessarily show up in these stress factors that I've been explaining. Now, a tree can have a weak structure and look completely healthy. And so I just wanted to mention that. So a tree can be hollow, for example, and not show any signs of decline in its foliage or any thinning in its foliage. So for structural integrity of a tree, you want to look at various aspects to determine if a professional needs to look at your tree, such as hollows, branch hollows or trunk hollows, decay, signs of decay, especially in major components of the tree. Those two things, you may want to think about having an arborist come and check the tree in more detail to see how extensive that rot is or how extensive that hollow is.
Now, if it looks healthy, though, you're saying that structurally it could be unhealthy, but it could, to the naked eye, look healthy.
Well,
how do you then know? Do you knock it to find out if it's hollow?
Yes, actually, okay. You do. You do have a sounding hammer to determine if the tree is hollow or not. Mm-hmm. But certified arborists, there is a formula that can determine how much structure a tree needs, how much solidity it needs, live wood it needs in a hollow trunk. So the sound wood is determined on how large the tree is and how large the crown is. So they can go through that scenario and that investigation, and they can drill the tree with a very fine drill bit and determine what is solid and what is rotten just from the color of the wood, and then determine, does it have enough solid wood to structurally be sound? If not, removal may be an option. Or pruning may be an option to lighten up the crown of the tree. Now, other components of structure are branch attachments. So a double-leadered tree or trees with V-shaped crotches can have bad structure as well.
Okay, great. And when is the best time to trim or prune a tree? Is that spring or fall? Or?
It depends what you're pruning. So I think, generally speaking, fall is always a good time to prune trees. Spring is also can be a good time, although there are some trees that are susceptible to disease, which are spread by insects that are attracted to fresh wounds or fresh cuts on trees. So spring may not be the best time for trees in an area that has a particular disease going through the community.
Okay, great. I know your dog's name is Rufus. Does your wife have a name besides the city arborist's wife?
Well, she also goes by, is that Urbana's arborist's wife? And mostly she likes to be called Beth. But, you know, a lot of times when we're out, she goes by, that's the Urbana City arborist's wife. So we kind of have a in-house joke about that.
That's funny. So I have one more question for you before we let you go. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be and why?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. You know, I'd have to say, off the top of my head, right at this moment, I might choose a bald cypress. And why? Because what flashed into my head when you said that was, we had a tornado go through our community in 1996, and there was a portion of the community that was really hit hard, and there weren't any trees standing except for, I think, three. They were all wiped out, and the three standing trees were bald cypresses. And they have a very strong flared trunk structurally, and they're a very apical dominant type tree, and they just withstood a lot of adversity there. So that's what first came into my mind today. Now, tomorrow I may be thinking something more pretty.
Mike's going to stand up in the face of adversity. Well, thank you so much for coming in. This has been a blast. I've learned a lot, and I hope that people have out there. Many thanks to you, listeners, for joining us for our second episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Brontz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. Episodes are also available on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe and rate with abandon. And send in your questions via email or Facebook. We love to hear from you. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. Until then, happy gardening.